Yes, and with my discussions with Colin Campbell and Dale Ellen Pfeiffer, we've talked a lot about the pros and cons and shortcomings and promises of different alternatives. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to get into the technical things again this time, but there is one point that perhaps needs to be brought out again, and that is that the infrastructure that we have with hydrocarbons is not the same infrastructure we need for the alternatives, and so we have to build that, right? And that takes time. And
that's right. It would probably take anywhere from 30 to 50 years to rebuild the energy infrastructure of our society. And I'm constantly meeting people who have, great ideas for, limitless energy sources, and if only we started today, well, of course, we could solve all the problems. Even if these alternative energy sources are capable of supplying as much net energy to society as fossil fuels, which is a huge question, the transition time is, as I said, a matter of decades. Now, Howard Odum, who just died about a month ago, was a great ecologist and writer on energy issues. He studied alternative energy sources, everything from solar and wind to micro hydro and hydrogen and all of the possibilities very, very carefully, about as thoroughly as anyone has done. And he concluded his last book titled A Prosperous Way Down by saying, although many energy substitutions and conservation measures are possible, none in sight now have the quantity and quality to substitute for the rich fossil fuels to support the high levels of structure and process of our current civilization. I think that summarizes it pretty well. And just today, November 1st, in Science magazine, there was an article urging the development of alternative energy sources, and in that article the authors also say that there is no current alternative to fossil fuels that would maintain world economic growth while generating fewer environmental toxins, basically saying essentially the same thing. In other words, the alternatives are important. They need to be developed. I'm absolutely in favor of solar, wind, the whole panoply of alternatives. And at the same time, we have to have a realistic understanding of what they're capable of. Currently, photovoltaics, for example, supply something like 0.006% of total global energy, our total global energy supply. So to grow that from 0.006% to even, say, 10% would require huge investment in many, many years, probably decades of time. So we're really looking at a fundamental shift in the whole energy infrastructure of our society that will entail not just changing from fossil fuels to some other sources, but also learning to do without energy for many of the applications that we've found, learning how to operate our society on the basis of less energy per year.
And photovoltaics is the fancy word for solar, right?
That's right, yes.
Also, the striking thing, given where we live and we are near wind farms in the Altamont Pass, your comments in your book, The Party's Over, about what it would take to gear up wind to its full potential.
Right. Well, currently, wind supplies about 0.07% of total global energy use. Now, I think wind is actually probably going to be easier to scale up than solar. But still, there are inherent limits as to the speed with which that process can go, and limits to the ultimate amount that we'll likely be able to derive from that source. In order to, again, produce something like 10% of the energy that we're currently using from wind would require an investment of literally hundreds of billions of dollars over many years. What we need to be doing, in fact, in order to accomplish this kind of energy transition is to switch from spending something like $350 billion a year on the military and begin spending something like $350 billion a year on our energy infrastructure.
Hey, you will not get any argument from me on that. But it seems that maybe nowadays the purpose of the military is to try to capture and control the remaining hydrocarbon sources.
Unfortunately, that's exactly true. There's reason to think that there are echelons within the government that are perfectly aware of our energy situation. And rather than breaking the unpleasant news to the general public and possibly being recipients of the backlash, you know, why didn't you tell us sooner, and why do we have to scale back our expectations for our children's lifestyle and so on. Rather than doing that, they've decided simply to continue with business as usual and try to maintain our addiction to fossil fuels by simply capturing greater supply from the Middle East. And, of course, the current push toward war with Iraq is a keystone of that policy.
And it's also been pointed out by my colleague Ed Rippey especially, but other people as well, that the military itself needs oil. It's this perfect example of how you have to use energy to get more energy.
Absolutely.
And one of my concerns about the future is, as the oil is dwindling in supply, that the military then begins to openly compete with civilian economies for what's left.
Right. Yeah, I think this is most likely to be apparent first with air transport. The commercial airline industry is probably one of the most vulnerable industries from the standpoint of the coming energy decline. Currently, all jet airliners run on kerosene, which is jet fuel, and they have no real alternative. It's true that there's been some research on running jetliners on hydrogen, but the basically all of the planes would have to be completely redesigned, and a whole entire new fleet of jetliners built to run on hydrogen. And even in that case, of course, there's the problem of where do we get the hydrogen, which currently now 100% of commercially available hydrogen is made from fossil fuels, from natural gas. So as the peak in fossil fuel production occurs in the next few years, the already economically strapped airline industry will almost certainly be pushed over the brink. And instead of the airline industry being available for civilian use and jet fuel going to civilian use, whatever is still available will almost certainly go to private aircraft for executives and other wealthy individuals, but overwhelmingly for the military.
No more super saver fares to the other coast.
Unfortunately, I think if you want to get in some sightseeing travel to the other side of the planet, the next couple of years is probably a good time to do that.